God, Jesus.
S&P 500 program trade by level one.
It's your wake up call, pal. Go to work.
Okay, today's talk is about treasury bonds, but before we get into that, let me introduce MasterclassTrader.com. This is your educational resource for getting more active and more skilled in this crazy market. Check out the Depth of Market Masterclass and the Advanced Spreading Masterclass, where I show you the what, why, and how of trading these markets. For 20% off, use the code TradingWithGB. That's really easy to remember. It's the name of this podcast, Trading with GB. 20% off. Easy. Okay, let's get to it. Today we're talking about treasury bonds. That's bills, notes, and bonds, and I'm going to explain all of that stuff in a minute. But I get a lot of emails from people that are, I suppose we'll go into a couple of categories. One email is, hey, I've been trading the E-mini for a while and I'm looking at the treasury note. Can you help? Or another email might be, I've been trading the T-note for a little while and I don't know what the heck I'm doing. Can you help? This podcast is for you guys. And I think it's fantastic that you're looking at this market. I think the treasury bonds, treasury notes are a fantastic group of markets to trade. There is a lot to them. There is you can approach trading that market like trading the E-mini. You look at your technicals, you look at your data coming out, that kind of thing, and you trade accordingly. You can do that. But there's a whole lot more maths and understanding of related markets and correlated markets that goes into it, which makes it more interesting. It's a bit like trading an option in which there's so many different things to understand, the maths and the relationships and so on, which to me makes it more interesting, and it makes it a better thing to try and research and dig out a trade, the path less traveled kind of thing, which you've heard me say before. Anyway, there's a lot we're going to cover today because there's a lot of things to know and understand when it comes to interest rates. So what we're going to cover, I made a quick list. I don't normally run off a list, but we'll see how we go. And I'm going to try and keep this down to about 20, 25 minutes, which I like to do with my podcast because I find anything over about 30, 40 minutes freaking boring. I like to keep my ones less than that. So we're going to try. And I'll try not to talk too quickly, but I am on my third coffee. So we'll see how we go. Anyhow, we will cover today. We're going to start with some boring terms that are related to treasury bonds and notes. It's the need to know stuff. It's the foundation for us moving forward. We're going to talk about what they call the primary and the secondary market. We're going to talk about that thing called the inverse relationship, which you may have heard of, the inverse relationship between price and yield. And it's one of those things where at first you go, but then as soon as you get it, you go, what's the problem? So it's a relatively simple concept, but of course it's one of those need to know things. Then we're going to move into the futures side of things. We'll look at some contract specs and a few little bits to do with treasury notes and bonds. And then I'm going to finish up with a few ideas on where you can dig deeper with your trading and your research if you want to get into these markets. So they're kind of things I could give you the answers to, but I'd rather give you more the questions to go and research yourself, because you'll learn a whole lot more doing it that way. Okay, let's get into a few terms. Fixed interest versus fixed income. These are the same things. It's the same term. It refers loosely to the whole industry of securities that have an interest-bearing component. For the most part, the interest is fixed, such as that in a term deposit or a bond or a bank bill. Sometimes they're flexible interest rates, but generally that makes up a very small part of the market. And when we're going to talk about futures, it's all about fixed interest rate analysis. Fixed interest, fixed income, same thing. You'll see it in the books are called fixed income analysis and all that kind of stuff. It's referring to just the general industry, I suppose you'd call it. Now, one thing we should go into before we get into pricing is the concept of the primary market versus the secondary market. It's a bit like a company issuing shares. They do so through a prospectus and they deal directly with the potential investors. That's the primary market. There's also a secondary market. When those shares go and list on an exchange, it's traded freely among investors and shareholders and all that kind of stuff. That's the secondary market. The same goes for the fixed interest market. You can have a primary market, which is essentially a treasury department issuing bonds to investors, and a secondary market where those bonds go and trade. Okay. Now that brings up an interesting point. The reason why I bring that up, this is very important because we're going to talk about a coupon rate versus an interest rate or yield. So when a bond is issued, okay, so when Treasury issues a bond to investors, they borrow money from the public and they issue this bond, they'll say this particular bond worth, say, $100,000 in 15 years will pay you 2% interest per year and then the full amount in 15 years. That 2% is called a coupon rate. That doesn't change. That's the fixed interest component. Okay. But what does change, and this is essentially established in the auction in the primary market, and then also as these bonds trade in the secondary market, what changes is the interest rate that is effectively received by the investor. Now, that sounds confusing at first, right? But if you think about it like this, if a bond is worth $100, let's do a simple example. A bond is worth $100 and it's paying 2% per year. Okay, if you go and buy it for, say, $101, you're still receiving that $2. 2% of 100 is 2% is $2. You're still receiving that $2 per year, but you paid $101 for it, right? So your effective interest rate you receive, your return on investment, is less than the 2%. Does that make sense? So they call that the yield. And that's, we look far more at the yield than the coupon. In any of this, from this point onwards, we're talking about yield. Okay, so that's an important part of analysis. But it's also, when they talk about the inverse relationship between yield and price, what that means is exactly what I just explained, right? So if the price goes up from 100 to 101, your effective return on investment or yield falls. Does that make sense? Because your $2 per year versus the $101 you paid is a smaller percentage. Your yield is less than it would be if you paid 100. Now, if prices go down, if demand falls for that particular bond, for example, if inflation goes up, demand will fall for that bond. So you might pay $99, but you're still getting that $2 or 2% of the $100 in yield until maturity. So when prices fall, your effective return on investment or yield increases. That's the inverse relationship. At first, it's a little bit confusing, but it's kind of not really when you think about it. It's pretty simple. Don't overthink it. Okay. A couple more terms, bills, notes, and bonds. They're referring to essentially the maturity of the instrument. And the definition varies from country to country. But generally speaking, bills are short-dated securities, 90 days, 30 days, 180 days, 360 days. Beyond that, you'll see notes such as the 2-year note, the 5-year note, the 10-year note. And beyond that, you see bonds. Okay, so that's they're American examples. In Australia, for example, everything's just called a bond from the 3 years to the 10 years out. It's a bond. Okay, but they're the same, essentially the same thing. So don't get confused. From this point on, if I say notes when you think I'm talking about bonds and so that happens to all of us. Don't worry about it. We generally don't talk too much about the bills market here, particularly here. Talking about bills is probably worth another podcast because it's a very big area in and of itself. It's a bit like trading options. It's like adding options to the mix. And I'll explain that when we do a bills or a STIRS, short-term interest rates, a STIRS episode. But for now, we're going to talk about notes and bonds. Okay. And that brings us into another term we want to talk about called the yield curve. You may have heard of that. You may remember that from senior high school economics or uni. The yield curve, if you haven't seen one before, it's just a representation, a graphical representation of the yields. Remember, not coupons, but yields. We already know those terms, okay? It's a graphical representation of the yields bonds are currently paying relative to their maturity. So you might see, for example, In fact, I can look at it right now on the CME website. You might see yields for 2 year, 5 year, 10 year, what they call the ultra 10 year, which we'll get into in a second, the 30 year, and the ultra 30 year. They're the big five futures markets for notes and bonds traded on the CBOT, the Chicago Board of Trade. So right now, that yield curve is upward sloping. It starts with the 2 years paying 0.2, a lousy 0.2%, out to the ultra 30-year paying a pretty lousy 1.2%. Okay, so that's a yield curve. So it compares the maturity of an instrument to the effective yield that you're getting, not the coupon, but the yield. Okay, so that's a yield curve. So we will talk about the yield curve a little bit more. I'll probably throw it in without even thinking when we start talking about other things, but they're the main terms to that we've covered. So what have we covered? Fixed interest, primary market, secondary market. We explained the relationship between coupon and interest rate or yield. Think of yield as return on investment. If you think of it like that, it's easy to remember. Okay, and so then once we look, we know that there's a thing called the yield or return on investment, we can understand why there's an inverse relationship between price and return on investment. Okay, so it's really simple when you think of it like that. Next terms we looked at were bills, notes, and bonds, and then we looked at the yield curve. Okay, so let's move on. Okay, now let's get into some more interesting things. Let's talk about the futures markets and the ones we're going to trade. So there's a good chance you would have heard of the T-note. It's often used in comparison when comparing what the markets have done relative to, say, the E-mini, gold, crude oil. It's a macro market. It's a measure of the US economy in terms of the fixed interest market, the T-note. It used to be the T-bond. Okay, they used to call that the 30-year. In fact, they still do. Even on the CME site right now, they still call the T-bond the 30-year on some pages. Okay, but it's not actually a 30-year bond. I'll explain that in a minute. There are five key markets. There are more than five markets you can trade on the CBOT, but there are five main ones, and we'll go into those one by one right now. We've got a 2-year note, a 5-year note, a 10-year note, which is the T-note, an ultra 10, an ultra 10-year note, then you've got your T-bond, your 30s, and then you've got your ultra T-bond. Now, the confusing and stupid thing is the T-note is not actually a 10-year note, even though they call it a 10-year note. It's not based on a 10-year note. It's based on a... but all of these securities are deliverable, okay? So they're not cash-settled like some bonds overseas. They're deliverable. And so what they're deliverable, it's not deliverable for one specific bond. It's within a basket or a list of potential bonds that can be delivered against this contract. Okay, so with something like the 10-year note, a deliverable security is somewhere between 6.5 years to 10 years. The ultra bond is about 9.5, a bit less than 9.5, I think, to 10 years. So it's bang on. It has to be bang on or as near as they can get to 10 years. The T-bond, what they call the 30s, is 15 to 25 years. And then there's an ultra T-bond, relatively new, these ultra 10s, and ultra T-bond. So that one is based on a security that's 25 to 30 years. Why am I telling you this? There's a reason. I'm going to get to it. Okay, so just trust me, it's important. All right. So just a quick recap. We've got a 2-year note, okay? That's based on twice the size of the other contract. So we tend not to look at that. It gets a bit confusing. So what we're going to stick with is the 5-year note, the 10-year note, the ultra 10s, the T-bond, and the ultra bond. That's five. And that gives us a good-looking yield curve, a good way to look at how one market's behaving versus the other, maybe put a spread trade on, that type of thing, a follow the leader kind of trade. If your experience has been trading the T-note and you've never looked at these other ones, then I have to tell you, you're doing it wrong, okay? Trading these markets are not perfectly correlated. They're very correlated, highly correlated, and one will give you the lead for the other. And this happens day in, day out. So if you're looking at one and you're not analyzing the others, then you're doing it wrong. Okay. So that's what this podcast is about, to introduce you to a wider spectrum of, you know, potential trades. And we, as I said before, we're going to finish up with some really cool research and trading ideas at the end. But I'll get onto that. Okay. So 5 year, 10 year, Ultra 10, T bond, and Ultra T bond. Okay. So that's your yield curve right there. They trade the quarterly cycle a bit like the mini. They're all, strangely, they're one of the last markets in the world to still be quoted in fractions. We don't know why the CBOT does this. I don't know why anyway. But CBOT quote fractions in corn, soy, wheat, and these treasury notes and bonds. Don't know why. It's funny to think, you know, stocks not that long ago were actually quoted in fractions. I think it was about year 2000, maybe a little bit before they went decimal. I can't quite remember, but it was around then. CBOT, for some reason, have kept with it. It's confusing, only because it's very hard to... It's not hard, but it's not very hard, I should say. But it makes it a bit more difficult to start comparing if you're looking at the T-note or the Ultra 10s versus, say, the Bund, the German 10-year equivalent, or the Aussie bond, or the JGB market, which is the Japanese market, or the UK gilts. So when you start looking at these markets, you have to get some type of standard of comparison, which is, we're going to get into this in a second. And this is the really interesting part, okay, and the really useful part and the real eye-opener. But quick go back over the contract specs again. These markets trade an almost 24-hour round-the-clock. They're all based on the way they're priced is... you'll see them priced with a big figure. Let me just grab a quote for, say, the T-bond right now. You'll see a big figure and then sometimes a dash or an asterisk or even a decimal, but it's referring, let's see, the T-bond is currently trading at 182 and 11. The 11 is in 30 seconds, not decimal. It's bloody confusing. Yeah, I agree. Okay. All of these markets, they trade in 30 seconds or fractions of a 30 second. Okay, so that makes it even more stupid and confusing. But let's start with your T-bond and your Ultra bond. They trade in dollars and 30 seconds of a dollar. Okay, so each dollar is worth... One in the contract spec size, it's worth $1,000. So each 30 second is worth $31.25. Okay. Your Ultra 10s and your T-note both trade in half of a 30 second. They don't call it a 64th. It's called half of a 30 second. Okay. So that is half of $31.25. So a tick is worth $15.62 and a half. Okay, don't bother writing this stuff down. It's all on the CME website. And then you've got the five-year note to make matters even worse. They do a quarter of a 30-second, and that's not a 1/28th. It's a quarter of a 30-second. The tick size there is $7.81 and a quarter. Okay, but they all trade in 30 seconds or fractions thereof. Does that kind of make sense? Does it sound stupid? Yeah. Well, anyway, it is what it is, and we deal with it. But it does bring us into an interesting area of analysis, which we call, start looking at price movement in terms of movement in yield. Okay, so when we say the T-bond is trading at 182.11, if it goes to 182.12, what does that actually mean? Well, if we bought it at 11 and we sell it at 12, we make $30, a bit over $30, right? That's our commission. Okay, so that makes sense. But what does it actually mean in terms of yield? Right, and why should we look at that? Well, as we said before, the markets are highly correlated. Okay, and they're not correlated in terms of price. No one cares about that. They're correlated in terms of yield. Remember, the Fed Reserve, they hike or loosen interest rates. They don't hike or loosen price. You know what I mean? Everything moves in interest rates. Things are quoted in the underlying market. It's quoted in interest rates. Okay. So we have to start thinking about, well, what does that actually mean? And that's where we come into this term called the DV01. DV, dollar value of one basis point. Okay, so sometimes called the BPV, the basis point value, because not every currency is called a dollar. Right, so in other countries, it's a BPV. Bloomberg, I think they call it, if you have a Bloomberg terminal, they call it a BPV. Most places call it DV01 because a lot of stuff is written out of America and America has dollars. Makes sense. Okay, so a DV01 is, look, when I first started trading, my very first trade was in a three-year bond on the Aussie market. And my following trades were all in bank bills. And it was a time when interest rates were extremely high. Early mid-90s interest rates were coming down from, short-term interest rates were something like 21%, 20%, something like that. So you had these massive movements both in spreads, even bank bill spreads during the day would move dramatically, and they were tradable like the E-mini is now, you know, volatile, moving up and down, and you get these whole different trends throughout the day. That's how the markets would work there. And I don't remember ever thinking about the concept of a DV01 back then. I'd probably heard of it. I studied securitization in uni, so I must have heard of it, but it wasn't really something that came into the analytics of it all. But these days, it's become a whole lot more important because markets, there's more spreaders out in the market. Every prop trader I know is a spread trader. Okay, so understanding the relationship between one market and the other in when it comes to fixed interest is about understanding your DV01. Okay, it's as simple as that. If you don't know it, you're losing out. Right, you're flying blind. If you can go ahead and trade the old 10-year note just like you trade the E-mini, bit of technicals, bit of false breaks, bit of whatever it is you look at, you can do that, sure. But if you don't understand why a market's moved a certain amount, then you're missing out. And you can do that. You can learn that stuff when you're understanding your DV01s. Now, all right, so how was a DV01 calculated? We won't go into the formula here, thankfully. It's essentially, what it means is how far a price will move in a security that equals one basis point. Okay, so let's look at one example. Now, you can look this up on the CME website. So just Google, you know, go to Google CME Group Treasury Analytics, and you'll see a page that has a little table called Treasury Analytics Summary. I won't give you the link because they changed it recently, and who knows, they might change it again, but you'll find it. And that gives you details of the twos, the fives, the tens, the ultras, the two ultras, and the 30-year bond, the T-bond. And it gives you a couple of calculations of what they call the DV01. There's a table there that says cheapest to deliver. That's referring to the underlying security, the one that's most likely to be delivered against at the end of when the futures contract expires or goes into delivery period. Okay, so that's the DV01 we look for. All right, so here's an example. In the five-year note, the current DV01 for the cheapest to deliver security is $50.91. Now, we said before that a 1/32nd movement in the fives is how much? It's $31.25, okay? So if we take, and here's how to do it. I'm going to the maths right now. You can hear me banging away on Excel, 31.25. Okay, so if we take the DV01, 50 and 91, divide it by 31.25, that gives me 1.62. That tells me there is 1.62 30 seconds movement in the 5 years equals a basis point. Now, if this is getting boring, don't let it get boring. It's very, very important you understand this stuff. I don't want to go too much into numbers and all that stuff because that does sound boring after a while, but this is important. Okay, and the trick is to do this with every single, and we'll get to this at the little research task at the end, but do this for every single security, the fives, tens, and the two ultras, and the 30. Go and work out how much in price movement is needed to see a one basis point change in yield. right? And once you start understanding those markets and then you start watching these markets move, you start going, now it's kind of working. Now I understand how the fives are leading the way today, or the T node is kind of lagging relative to the other two. And therein lies your trading potential, right? With that understanding of DVO1, with that understanding of movement in terms of yield, not price, you can see what's leading and what's lagging. You can see what the market's trying to do. And that provides your trading opportunity. Okay, so let me just go through another one. The current DVO1 for an ultra bond is $427. It's huge. Divide that by 3125, and you've got 13, almost 14, 30 seconds. So what that means is the market has to move 14 30 seconds to equate to one basis point movement. That's huge. That basically says it's a very volatile contract. Okay, but let's see if there was a scenario where you saw the 30s move one basis point and then you see the ultras move only six ticks. We think, well, hold on, why is that? That's out of whack. One might be a sell, one the other might be a buy. Okay, very simple and exaggerated example. But the point is, you don't know if one is undervalued or overvalued if we're just talking in ticks, but you know if you understand in yield. Okay, so that's the DVO1. That's how these things are priced. Let's move on. Okay, before we get into a few research and trading ideas, let's have a super fast recap. I realize I'm kind of dragging on. That DVO1 conversation takes a little while. But listen, if you don't get the DVO1 thing yet, that's cool. Email me or even jump back on that CME Group website. They've got a page here. Let me just find it. There's a white paper called Calculating the Dollar Value of a Basis Point. Just Google that and it'll come up. It's an old December 2008 it was written, but there's a paper there on how to calculate it. And it probably goes into a little bit more detail than we need as traders. It's more about the maths, but understanding the maths is a good thing. Okay. So let's have a quick recap. Today we started, we spoke about, we started with a few terms, fixed interest versus fixed income, primary market versus secondary market, coupon rate versus yield. Think of yield as return on investment, remember. And that brings us naturally into the inverse relationship between price and yield, price and return on investment. Okay, just think of it like that, and then that inverse relationship makes sense. We defined bills, notes, and bonds. We looked at which refers to time to maturity for a security. And that, of course, then when we're looking at all of them, that creates our yield curve. And the yield curve is where a lot of prop traders and a lot of professional traders trade. They'll trade one versus the other. So that's when we looked at futures. We mentioned quick mention of the two-year notes, but really we want to focus on the fives, the T-note, or the tens, the ultra tens, the T-bond, or the 30s, as it's still sometimes called, or the ultra 30s, and the ultra 30s. So those five key futures markets. Okay, and so that gives us a yield curve to trade with. When we look at things like DVO1s, it gives us a way of thinking about price movement that helps us analyze one market versus the other. It gives us perspective. Okay, it doesn't necessarily mean we have to be spread traders, although there's no reason why you shouldn't go down that path. But it at least gives us perspective, right? If you're in a city looking to buy fill up your car with petrol, say, and you see three petrol stations, you're comparing price one versus the other. It's the same thing with the yield curve, right? It's you understand the DVO1 will give you an understanding of how each one's priced and how each one's moving, and where the flow is, what they're trying to do in the fives versus what might be happening in the T-bond. So like I mentioned before, a lot of people come into this market and trade the T-note thinking, well, I'll just trade it like I do the E-mini. It goes up, it goes down, it has breaks, it has false breaks, all that kind of stuff. And that's fine. That's a place to start. But if you do that, you're missing out. You're missing out on the right way to analyze this market. And that is to understand how yield moves relative to each other. So in prop firms, and we've done this before, with new traders, we'll have drills that teach you to understand that flow dynamic, that relative value. I don't always call it spread trading. I call it relative value, okay? And that teaches you, hey, this is what the fives are doing versus the 30s or the ultra and this kind of thing. And if you think about it, if you're looking at five markets, you've got a lot of potential combinations of buying one here, selling two there, buying another one there, and, you know, getting, you know, a relatively complex trade on based on how those markets are trading at the time, or perhaps what your view of the yield curve or what your view of the, you know, upcoming non-farm payrolls is going to be. So understanding, it gives you a portfolio of things to trade within the same category. Does that make sense? So we looked at that. Then we're going to finish up with some ideas and some research and some things to go away, some homework. Now, these are the things I could give you the answers to, but I'm not going to, okay? I can give you hints, and if you want to email me, I can very much help you. And in fact, some of these answers are actually in the masterclass course, both on the spread trading one and on the Dom Bootcamp on the masterclasstrader.com site. And I'll give you discount code at the end for that. So stay listening. But so here's some project ideas, research ideas. First of all, go away and find your DVO1s. Open up an Excel spreadsheet. Create a little table that says 5-year note, 10-year note, ultra 10s, T-bond, ultra 30s. And write down the DVO1 for each of them. Right, and take that number divided by 31.5. And that will give you how many 30 seconds each of those markets move to equal one basis point. And it'll be a bit of an eye-opener as you do it, because they vary quite a lot, right? And in a way, DVO1 is a measure of volatility. It's not that different from using your average true range. I think we spoke about that in the spreading podcast, using average true range to measure spread ratios. Well, in fixed interest, you use the DVO1 to calculate your spread ratios or your hedge ratios. So you might see some analytics, for example, looking at a spread between a 10 and a 30. That's called the knob, notes over bonds. Someone had a sense of humor about the knob spread. Now, you'll often see that quoted one versus one. That's incorrect. Right? The correct ratio is approximately the ratio of DVO1s. Funny that. Okay. So research task number one, go find your DVO1s and calculate how many ticks, how many 30 seconds, not ticks, how many 30 seconds is one basis point move in yield. Okay. So and email that to me if you like and I'll check it. I don't mind. Now, another thing to go away and research number two is have a look at the fives versus the 30s. Okay, I think they're both fantastic markets to trade. The 30s is the big boys market. It is volatile. You don't want to start out in that. You can lose your account and more. The fives is an easy one to start in. But from a research point of view, go and have a look for an intraday trend, say markets going up. Which one's leading the way? Is the five leading the way or is the 30s leading the way? And calculate that in terms of not price, but in DVO1s or basis points, okay? Do the same thing on an intraday downtrend. Which one's leading the way in terms of basis points? And do the same thing perhaps over a 3, 5, 10-day trend. Which one has moved more in terms of basis points? Start understanding that. You'll start seeing how these things move together. The short answer is they'll often move yield for yield within a short time frame, but then with larger moves, you'll see it move a little differently. And I'll let you find that out. Email me if you like, and we'll talk about it. Okay, I'm very happy to talk about it. But I want you to go and do that research first, because you'll learn as you do it. Okay. Another thing to go and have a look at is volatility throughout the day. I think that's a big area that a lot of people ignore. And they assume that the market at 10 o'clock is going to be the same as it is at 8 o'clock, as it's going to be the same at 2 o'clock, and it's not, generally speaking. have a look at volatility, how it moves throughout the day. And why? Why is it moving at that particular time? Figure out, hey, look, it's not just something that might be happening in the US, but it's when the bunds open or the Canadian bond opens or another market opens or even an important piece of data comes out in another market and it moves that other market and therefore all those little auto spreaders and spread traders are moving this market as well. So start thinking about all these influences. Okay, email me with questions again. All right. Same goes with data. So go and have a look at how the market behaves around important pieces of data. If you want to do this, go deep on this one. I do have a course on subscriber to Masterclass Trader. I'll send it to you for free. But I do have a short course on how to analyze the T-note or one of the fixed interest markets versus data and how they've correlated over the years. And that can in itself can give you good trading ideas. And it's not just about expectations. It's more about what the market's doing beforehand to what it's doing afterwards. So have a look at how these markets behave around a certain piece of data. On my site, Bauer Post, there's an economic calendar. You can scroll back and look at history. You can get that same kind of economic calendar on a lot of those FX sites as well. But look up non-farm payrolls, okay, or CPI or anything. Just pick anything. And go away and do a bit of research and write to me about it. And we'll chat about it if you like. Okay. I'm going to wrap it up here. I mentioned before, any listeners to this podcast, you can get a 20% off my Depth of Market Bootcamp or my Advanced Spread Trading course on masterclasstrader.com. The code is TradingWithGB. Pump that in, you get 20% off. It's a bit of a no-brainer. But just remember that a lot of the stuff we put on the site is not the entire course. I need you to engage with me as you do the course, and I'll guide you through stuff and send you more material like I will do with this data analytics and stuff like that. So that's when you get the most out of it. That's when it really pays for itself. So until next time, we'll speak then. Trade well, be safe.